We got to chat with the CEO of Bionic, Karina Ramberger, a digital payments management provider of business services for SMEs, fintechs and social impact entities across Africa, which recently got acquired by MFS Africa, which is Africa's largest digital payments hub. We discussed Bionic and the problems it's solving, the state of digital payments in Africa, her opinions on cryptocurrencies, and where digital payments on the African continent are headed. Take a listen. Karina, welcome to our call.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I think I'll just go straight to... maybe you can just get started by introducing yourself, who you are and what you do at Bionic.
Yeah, happily. So my name is Karina Ramberger. I am the CEO of Bionic, and post merger, I will be the executive VP for Bionic, which is our SME-facing tool suite within the wider MFS Africa group. So my background is I'm American by birth and passport. I've been living and working in sub-Saharan and predominantly Eastern Africa for the better part of the last 15 years. I'm based currently in Nairobi, well, Kenya, in and out a bit of Nairobi in these strange low movement times. And I've been with Bionic since the middle of 2018. My role at the company and my background is in management consulting and really scaling effective high performance teams to deliver on whatever the scope may be. So I joined Bionic at a time when they'd just hit profitability and they were really starting to experience scale at an exponential rate and needed to really start to do all of the things that any fintech startup needs to do as they start to experience that rapid growth, and they need to have some fundamental like foundation systems and things put into place, as well as pulling together a really strategic team to manage that scale effectively. So I came in at that stage and have been doing that ever since. And the journey has now brought us to this point where we are, have been acquired or are in the process of finalizing regulatory approval for the acquisition of Bionic by MFS Africa. We're very excited about this. We tend to talk about it often in terms of a merger, because acquisition, merger, and obviously they're closely linked, and technicalities of the transaction aside, for all functional purposes, the product offerings and the footprint of the company's services and the teams are operating as you would expect in a conventional merger, what we think of when that term comes to mind, which is a joining of forces in order to move from strength to strength more rapidly together.
All right. I think we'll get into the acquisition later on, but maybe you can just tell us a bit more about Bionic and possibly the problems that you're solving here in East Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. So Bionic was born in Uganda in 2013, and it set out to solve the problem of, as we see mobile money just catching on like wildfire in a region of the world that has been chronically underserved by financial services, and now more specifically by digital financial services. How do we help businesses, organizations, SMEs, institutions who need to be able to reach into the bottom of the pyramid to deliver products and services and grow a vibrant economy? How do we help them take advantage of this mobile money technology? It's incredibly powerful, as we've seen, but there are some issues. Namely, when I'm speaking to somebody who is comfortable with the Kenyan context and the Safaricom context, I think it's important to remind everyone that Safaricom is the tip of the spear, and it always has been as far as mobile money and mobile money services, including for businesses. So the ability for a business in Kenya to integrate to Safaricom's business-facing APIs and use the services, things like Lipa na M-Pesa, that sort of stuff, that is not perfect. It's good, but it needs to go further in order for a wider range of businesses and fintech companies and FMCG organizations, NGOs, etc., to really scale and rely upon mobile money as a piece of payment business continuity within their systems and their operations. There's still some gaps in the service offering from the telco directly. Now, take that outside of the Kenyan context, where you have Safaricom with massive market share, which has its own challenges, and think about being in Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania, DRC. You are working with multiple, not one telco predominating, and you are working with telcos who do not have a mandate at this stage to be business facing in their application, which means that if you take a customer like 4G Capital, who's wanting to extend SME and MSME loans to small businesses all across the country, when they're wanting to do that in Tanzania and Uganda, that requires integrations and service arrangements and maintaining connections to 4, 8, 10 telcos. And suddenly, you're taking up a tremendous amount of institutional capacity to build and then maintain what is basically a payments connection. And we try to take that piece of the puzzle and simplify it for our customers. So I often explain the experience of using the Bionic toolbox as a little bit like QuickBooks plus online banking sitting on top of mobile money rails predominantly, but also connected to bank payments and other payment channels. So when a customer uses Bionic, they're able to control and customize the funds flows for payments that are being pushed out, as well as for collections that are being pulled or pushed in from end users. They're able to run reports, specify security settings, customize all of their reconciliation and integrate it into their CRM for finance and for HR and other management functions. So that's what Bionic set out to solve. The challenge for us has always been it takes time to grow into new markets. And that's, again, to come back to where we're headed in this conversation, which is the acquisition. MFS Africa's footprint is of tremendous advantage to us to help extend the use of that product, the access of that set of services to businesses and organizations and SMEs operating in 35 countries instead of 9, which is our current footprint.
All right. And I hear what you're saying, and maybe if you can clarify, would you say you're solving an interoperability problem? Because I'm sure you've seen the problem between M-Pesa and Airtel. Would you say that's a problem that Bionic is solving?
Yes, absolutely. We're a piece in the interoperability puzzle, but we're a piece that it's not just infrastructure, it's also utility and functionality sitting on top of that, of filling that infrastructure gap. So it's interoperability plus ease of use and functionality. We find ourselves increasingly trending towards a SaaS-style offering as opposed to a conventional aggregator model that just kind of links you up to all the different telcos and banks and such, where we're actually, a lot of the value that we bring to organizations is their ability to manage all of their payments workflows through one easy, secure platform that has that interoperability as the underlying layer. Because that's what the market is demanding, right? The assumption is that it should be as easy to send, if we have money on our phone, it should be as easy to use that money to transact as it is to pick up that phone and make a phone call. That's the expectation. And the technology is there, the regulations are catching up, but we have to pull it all together and package it in such a way that makes it easy to use.
All right. Now, speaking of all these challenges that we are talking about, including regulation, what would you say is the state of digital payments in Africa?
I mean, it's a big place. So anything I say is going to be a little bit, need to be taken with that in mind. But in general,
maybe we can talk about in general and then maybe in East Africa.
Yeah, sure. So in general, leapfrogging is a term that I shy away from because it's been flogged to death a little bit. But nonetheless, digital is a clean, low infrastructure way of connecting people across large distances, which we've just said, you know, Africa is huge, and the complex geography, right, where infrastructure has not been a historically well-developed sector, shall we say. So there's a whole set of problems that digital innovation and digital payments in particular can help to solve rapidly and cleanly and equitably, because the barriers to entry are lower, right? So there is still some infrastructure involved in getting that extended. There's a lot of talk right now about increasing deep sea fiber optic cables into the region so that we've just got more bandwidth. Towers being built in ways that are environmentally sustainable and that have, for example, are linked to renewable energy sources as opposed to generators, which is the historic way that telcos are powering their transmission towers. So there's still some infrastructure pieces that need to be put into place, but digital represents the lowest barrier to entry, both on the side of the user, the easiest access, and on the side of the infrastructure that's required to sustain and grow it. So it's an exciting place to be. Mobile money is revolutionary. You know, Kenya is at the heart of the tip of the digital financial services sphere in payments because Safaricom rolled out this incredible product. And, you know, I think to an extent, and I say this in the best possible way, have really had to work to make sure that it doesn't become the tail that wags the dog, right? It's such a powerful product. And uptake and use and just, you know, skyrocketed and spread rapidly. So then to kind of focus a little bit further on East Africa, because East Africa centers around, you know, the Kenyan sort of M-Pesa drive for mobile money, the standards are really high in many ways. We now have a generation of young people who grew up seeing digital value transfers as commonly as they did cash value transfers, right? That's really special. It means that they're not tied to the idea of physical currency, but they're tied to the idea or the concept of being able to transfer value digitally, and the expectation is that that be seamless and simple. The biggest challenge, in my opinion, that faces East Africa specifically is fragmentation. So there's no one market, despite Kenya being a strong market, despite Uganda being a net exporter, despite Tanzania having a huge resource base, despite Kenya really trying to build up, or excuse me, Rwanda really trying to build up sort of a modern digital manufacturing and tech hub within the region. None of those markets stands alone as an adequately attractive size of market to bring in the kinds of investment that fuel change and fuel growth. So we have to be able to band our operations together as a region and be viewed as a block. Right now, the biggest challenge to that, and I think COVID is a perfect example, really shed light globally on existing inequalities and inadequacies in various aspects of society. But the fragmentation within the East Africa block in terms of regulation and market access is the single greatest thing holding us back, and even more importantly, holding back our customers. You know, time and time again, I talk to startup customers who are fintech or tech companies looking to scale, and they, you know, they've done maybe a seed round or an early Series A, and in order to get the kind of number that they need in order to attract the kind of investment they deserve, they have to be multi-market. And the market, the barriers to that are incredibly high. There's not a lot of alignment, both within markets, across different sort of regulatory bodies, and then across markets as well. And that's the single greatest lever that we as a region could pull to attract the kind of investment that I think we really deserve to be seeing in this part of the world.
All right. Do you feel regulation at this time is helping or not? I mean, the current regulation as it stands within East Africa, is it helping, you know, build or at least help in that divide that we are seeing across these jurisdictions?
You know, I think it is helping, but I think that it's not going far enough. I think that it's thinking too small. And that's an easy trap to get stuck in. But I do think it has to be aspirational. I think regulators have to find a way to work together to increase economic vibrancy and resilience together. And that requires a certain level of courage and vision to look outside of just the here and now and look at what will set us up competitively as a region on a global stage. So yeah, I think that I think regulators are doing the right thing, but they probably need to do them a little bit faster and with a little bit greater aspirational focus.
All right. Now, speaking of regulation and maybe positioning ourselves in a global market, maybe the next question is, what's your opinion on cryptocurrencies? We've seen adoption of cryptocurrencies across the continent picking up. It's not a very popular, you know, topic or subject a lot of people want to discuss, especially regulators. But what's your opinion of cryptocurrencies and their adoption?
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, I'm neither a technical person nor a compliance specialist. And you're absolutely right. You drop cryptocurrency into a conversation with either group of people, specialists, and you've got, you know, 100 opinions for every 50 people in the chat. I think from my perspective personally, I'm not going to bet on any one horse. I certainly think cryptocurrency may have a place. And that place is yet to be determined. It's going to be determined by regulation and by the industry itself as it seeks to kind of mature a little bit. There's always a little bit of a challenge, I think, associated with what is developed as a sort of anti-establishment technology meant to work around the edges, being brought into the mainstream. So I, to be honest with you, am waiting to see what happens, but I'm certainly very excited about giving people and industries more options, particularly when those options are more transparent and more secure. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a wait and see, but I'm very, very open to seeing, I'm very encouraged to see new opportunities arising for payment channels and access to transparent payment processes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it looks like everybody has adopted a wait and see attitude. Yeah, let's see how that goes. And in line with that, would you say, or are there companies that Bionic has worked with before that are in the crypto remittance space?
Yeah, absolutely. We have worked with multiple fintech startups and organizations that use cryptocurrency. They've all run into some of the same kinds of issues that I just referenced with, you know, uncertain regulation. There are people that are early adopters, and then there are people who are really quite nervous about the technology. And I think that always creates opportunities and challenges. Most customers who I have seen who are working in crypto diversify pretty quickly just for the sake of sort of business continuity and sustainability. So they're not betting on just one horse. They're often looking at, you know, having multiple business lines of products, often as transition platforms moving towards advancing crypto further.
All right. From your experience running Bionic, at what point do you feel governments step in when maybe a space like cryptocurrencies grows? At what point have you seen now regulators come in and they're like, okay, I think we need regulation. We want to look, you know, deeper into this.
It's a matter of philosophy, right? It's a regulatory philosophy. If you take a proactive, sort of collaborative approach to regulation of new technologies, then what you're going to see are things like wide open, well-established regulatory sandboxes that invite players to come play in safe provisional spaces so that both they and the regulators can collaborate together around how to most effectively create safeguards within regulation that is keeping up with the technological advances. The sort of opposite end of that spectrum would be a punitive sort of react and punish approach, where regulators get involved to the point where they either see or suspect fraudulent activity or behavior that could be considered predatory or endangering consumers. And that could be anything from actual criminal acts of fraud or theft to a perception of unclear, you know, payment processes that create fear because there's uncertainty because of newness. So as I said, those are kind of two ends of a broad spectrum, and regulators can fall somewhere in the middle. And I think that's where the conversation probably needs to be a little bit wider and a little bit more aspirational in terms of, I would like to see bigger, brighter sandboxes that are inviting technology players to play in the sun, where regulators can really see and learn how best to promote healthy use of new technologies without allowing unhealthy exploitation of consumers to flourish at the same time. But it's a challenge globally. I mean, I don't think any government has solved this problem. You know, Facebook in the US and Twitter are constantly being called before Congress to testify, and no one can agree. So this is not an easy problem to solve, and it's certainly not one that's unique to this region.
All right. I think now the biggest news for Bionic has been the acquisition by MFS Africa. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that acquisition, you know, how it came about, what led to it, and what it means for, you know, SME digital payment space in Africa.
Sure. So Bionic, as I mentioned, we hit profitability in 2018. I joined the company, and we realized very quickly, we'd operated a very, very lean, efficient team prior to that. I think when I joined, we were 9 employees globally, working in 5 markets. And we recognized that very quickly we risked crumbling under the weight of our own success, you know, maintaining exponential growth with a very tiny, tight team. It becomes unsustainable pretty quick. So we recognize that given our commitment to sort of financial and business sustainability, we needed to go out and raise a Series A round pretty quickly so that we could scale a high-functioning team across a larger area and bigger group of professionals to tackle the challenges associated with volume. And that needed some CapEx as opposed to just OpEx. So we went out and opened a Series A equity round with the support of Icon, who's a consulting financial advisory firm based out of London. They've been brilliant. They have a whole team focused on fintech in Africa, and I cannot recommend them highly enough. But in Q3 of 2019, we went out and started talking to investors about joining in this journey with Bionic. In the meantime, MFS Africa's founder, Dare, had known Luke and our founder, Luke Choheri, had known Luke off and on over the years. They'd been in touch at various conferences, etc., had conversations around, you know, what they were each doing. And historically, if a company was looking for MTO services and came to Bionic, we would refer them to MFS Africa. And if a company was looking for like front-end domestic local currency payment flows management tools and came to MFS Africa to say, hey, can you help me? They were referring them to Bionic. So we were very conscious of the complementarities between the two organizations and that we really played in adjacent spaces. So when the news about us opening around came out, Dare and Luke reconnected, and Dare's investors were interested to see if MFS Africa might be a good equity partner for Bionic since we are so complementary. So that's where the conversation started, I would say, in maybe October or November of 2019. And it very quickly became clear that there was good cultural alignment. We had similar visions for what we wanted to accomplish and how we saw the role of mobile money in fintech and African fintech on the global stage. It's very neatly aligned. And that we were wanting to grow in the same kinds of ways in the same kinds of direction. So that equity investment conversation went rapidly. And that was the initial sort of negotiation. And then as we got deeper into it, we sort of looked at it and said, you know, we should either be all in or not. Like, we need to make this a full partnership, or we probably will both end up getting frustrated, because the most efficient thing that we could possibly do is, you know, dive in with both feet and truly become one organization, one family. And so by December, we had a term sheet that was for a full acquisition. So then we worked through the due diligence and signed the purchase agreement a couple of months ago. And now we're just kind of waiting on a few final regulatory approvals from predominantly the Tanzania Competition Authority to finalize and move forward.
All right. Now you've joined the MFS Africa family. How will now the, you know, the digital payment space in Africa look like moving forward? I know MFS Africa, I mean, has over, I think, 200 million users.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel now Bionic joining MFS Africa will affect the market?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are a few different aspects to this, to be honest. First of all, there's just the story that it tells, right? And I think that it's very important that we not forget what it means for an African fintech startup to exit into another African fintech. That speaks to so many things. It speaks to the growth potential of the market. It speaks to the foundational strength of the region and of fintech in the region. And it speaks to the unique value proposition and the unique approach that we bring from this part of the world to solving fascinating challenges in fintech and in payments that the rest of the world can learn from. And I feel strongly about this, because one of the things that I found as we were talking to various potential investors throughout the course of the second half of 2019 is that, as you would expect, investors have opinions about how you run your business. It's to be anticipated. One of the things that I discovered very quickly in those conversations is that a lot of times the ideas about how to run a successful, meaningful business in fintech, in sub-Saharan Africa, in emerging markets, etc., those ideas were less relevant when they came from further afield, from economies that have seen scale, for example, from ad-based revenue models for SaaS products. Those don't work here in the same way. And that's probably a good thing for the world, in my opinion, if I'm going to get up on a little soapbox. And I think that it's those kinds of visions for the future that a uniquely local transaction into a global space is important to remind ourselves how important of a player we are. Not as MFS Africa Group, but as a region and as a sector of the economy in the world. I think the second story, to be a little bit more granular about it, is we're looking at being able to extend to those 200 million users SME access. So that means being able to connect those 200 million individual unique beneficiaries with businesses that are selling FMCG durable goods or solar panels or smartphones or agricultural insurance or healthcare to those same 200 million users. So it's connecting SME products and services to individual beneficiaries on a much grander scale. And that's really exciting to me, because what it means is that it gives SMEs access to a consumer base, and it gives the consumer base access to goods and services with much lower barriers to entry. And that's really important in a market where we have huge distances, many borders that can get closed down, as we've seen, and, you know, difficult infrastructure and topographies to overcome. the more easily we can extend those kinds of products and services digitally, the more rapidly we enable interconnected growth.
All right, true. I like what you mentioned, where that this market is unique and it requires a very different kind of approach. Now, I would say some critics point to the fact that we need a very diverse fintech space. And, some might say that such acquisitions are really not helping grow the fintech space. What would you say?
Oh, as I'm sure you can imagine, I would disagree heartily. MFS Africa and Bayonic, our team combined, our team number, I think is 90-ish people from 50 countries. We speak over 30 languages in the organization. We are the face of diversity. We are 50% women in a sector that is notorious for being heavily male dominated. And so I agree with you that diversity is necessary in this space. But part of the challenge that we are addressing is interoperability and reducing the barriers to economic activity that fragmentation causes. And so because of that, you need to be big. You need to be big enough to overcome those barriers and then bring your customers across those barriers with you. I anticipate that in the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to see digital payments in Africa become go from a game of many to a game of few, and we'll be one of those few. Not because we want to reduce competition, we think competition is healthy, but we recognize that you need to have a certain amount of inertia in order to meaningfully overcome some of the barriers that hinder smaller companies. So we're going to see consolidation in the next 18 months in digital payments in Africa. And then you're going to see, a field narrow from 20 big players to 7 big players. And then we're all going to push each other really hard to make this an exciting place for businesses.
All right. Yeah, it's definitely exciting to see how that plays out. And maybe just to ask, as we wind up, how do you feel we can avoid closed systems? We've seen before where big companies have grown, but as a result and because of that monopoly, they are very much closed, and we don't see that growth as a result. How do you feel MFS Africa will solve this, or at least we will not see it going that direction?
Absolutely. So I think the thing to keep in mind with that concern is, unlike maybe 20th century kind of traditional corporations and companies, our value proposition is based on access to maximum people and organizations. So the easier it is to reach as many other people as possible through us, the more attractive our value proposition is. In order for that to be the case, we can't have closed doors. We have to be open. We have to collaborate. We have to remain committed to the belief that together we go farther and together we grow more, that there's not a limited amount of business to be had and I need to fight with other people for the turf, but that together we can create more for everyone. Bayonic has always taken this view. We were the first payments organization in East Africa to have open APIs, have publicly available APIs. You can still go to our website and set up, consume our APIs and set up a test account, self-help, entirely self-serve. And that will remain because, to use a word picture to kind of round this out, you know how when you see a building and everybody has taken one electric line in and split it to go to all of the units?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's how we do things. That's how we go farther together. We need to then make sure that those connections are not a fire hazard, right? And that's where bigger like quality assurance practices and things come in. But we need to make sure that we're not creating barriers to that level of innovation, and that means remaining open. That takes certain courage, certain confidence, And it holds us accountable because it's very transparent. And in my opinion, that's the only way that we'll succeed.
All right. Maybe just to mention something you said, yes, open APIs are quite important. I think there was a research that came out a few weeks ago that showed, for example, open banking is getting adopted across the world, but Africa is still lagging behind.
Yeah,
I know maybe you have a comment on that.
You know, I have lots of thoughts, but I'll stick to this one. I believe that we are a young population that is incredibly rich and historically beset. And there is no reason for that to continue. We must develop products and services, particularly in the financial space, that encourage and incentivize and support poor communities to jump into the formal economy without squelching the innovation that has made this a rapidly growing, fascinatingly unique, incredibly diverse and vibrant economic space for the last 30 years. I'll stop there.
Yeah, I know you have a lot of opinions on that. So maybe in closing, my final question would be, how do you see the future of digital payments in Africa now, moving forward?
Yeah, you know, as I said, I think it's going to become a game of few, and those few will remain open and available. I think the vision of being able to transact, whether you're a business or an individual, as easily as you can pick up the phone and make a phone call or send an email, I think that's the future. I think that it's our job to make sure that that future is available to all and not just to some.
Okay. Thank you so much, Karina.
Pleasure.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, David.